All right, let's dive into something that might sound a little cloak and dagger, a little spy movie-ish, but it's way more relevant than you might think. Psychological warfare.
Yeah, and when most people hear that, they think, you know, mind control or brainwashing.
Right, the stuff of Hollywood.
But really, it's much closer to, well, good marketing.
Interesting.
It's about influencing thoughts and actions to achieve specific goals.
Okay, so persuasion with a purpose.
Exactly. But instead of selling a product, we're talking about achieving military objectives.
Gotcha. So this is where PSYOP comes in, right?
That's right, psychological operations.
And for this deep dive, we've got some declassified military documents. A real treat.
A training guide, actually, from 1999.
Oh, cool. So like a peek behind the curtain of PSYOP strategy.
Exactly, a guide for the Joint Psychological Operations Task Force, or JPOTF.
JPOTF. Got it.
Yeah.
Now, you might think this is all run by some super secret agency, right?
Right, shadowy figures in dark rooms.
But the command structure is surprisingly straightforward.
It is, yeah. You might even say, kind of boring.
No secret underground bunkers, then.
Nope, all starts at the top, pretty conventional. Combatant commanders, the generals in charge of a region, you know.
Okay, so the big brass.
They have ultimate authority over all PSYOP assets in their area.
So it's all under one roof, so to speak. Makes sense to me.
Right. Keeps things streamlined, unified.
I imagine coordinating something as complex as PSYOP, I mean, you've got different branches of the military involved, must be a logistical puzzle.
Oh, absolutely. Lots of moving pieces.
How do they make that work?
Delegation, that's the key. Combatant commanders can hand off control of certain PSYOP elements.
But I'm guessing they don't just wash their hands of it.
Oh, no. They're still ultimately responsible. Think of it like a CEO delegating a project, right?
Right. They trust their team to handle it, but the buck ultimately stops with them.
Exactly. High stakes delegation, though, potentially.
No kidding. So who are they delegating to specifically?
The JPOTF. That's where they come in.
Okay, so they're like the boots on the ground, the specialists,
More like the brains of the operation, I'd say.
the messaging
They
masterminds.
plan, coordinate, execute the whole nine yards.
So kind of like the special ops of the messaging world in a way.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. They're brought in when a specific situation calls for their expertise.
So no rogue operations happening off the books. This is all very structured and intentional.
Very much so. And that emphasizes something really important.
What's that?
PSYOP isn't just about propaganda, you know, churning out leaflets and
It's more
slogans.
sophisticated than that.
Way more. There's a real science to it, a strategy.
Interesting. And speaking of strategy, these declassified documents actually lay out some key principles for successful PSYOP, don't they?
They do, yep. Straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Give us a taste. What's principle number one?
You got to have a clearly defined mission. Sounds basic, right?
Seems obvious, but I bet it's easy to get lost in the weeds.
It happens. You need to know exactly what you're trying to achieve.
So, concrete goals, measurable objective.
Exactly. And it's not a spray and pray approach either.
No carpet bombing with messages.
Nope. You have to understand your target audience deeply.
So, tailoring the message for each specific situation.
Absolutely. What works in one culture might completely backfire in another. Yeah.
Totally. Imagine trying to sway public opinion in, I don't know, a rural village versus a bustling city.
Exactly. Different values, different beliefs, different ways of communicating, even.
So cultural sensitivity is key.
Big time. And that leads right into the second principle. Gotta think long term.
So this isn't about quick wins or flashy campaigns.
No. This is sustained effort. PSYOP is a marathon, not a sprint.
And I bet you have to constantly evaluate whether your strategies are actually working.
Oh, for sure. Course correction is essential. Always gotta be monitoring and adjusting.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned different approaches. I read that there are actually four main categories of joint military PSYOP.
You're right, there are.
Four. Okay, I'm all ears. Lay it on me.
Think of it like a spectrum of influence. You've got strategic, operational, tactical, and consolidation PSYOP.
Wow. Okay, four flavors of PSYOP. Break those down for me. What are the key differences?
Well, strategic PSYOP is the big picture stuff. It's about shaping global perceptions, you know, like influencing how the world views a certain country or conflict.
Okay, so long-term, big picture stuff. What about operational PSYOP?
That's more focused, more targeted. It's about supporting specific military campaigns in a region.
So more aligned with achieving immediate military objectives.
Yeah, exactly. Then you've got tactical PSYOP, which is even more focused. Yeah. That's about directly influencing enemy forces during battles or engagements.
Wow. So that's literally on the front lines trying to impact what's happening right then and there.
Exactly. And finally, there's consolidation PSYOP, which comes into play after a conflict, often in occupied territories.
So picking up the pieces, stabilizing the situation.
Exactly. Winning over the local population, promoting stability, trying to win the peace after the fighting's over.
That makes sense. So each category has a very distinct purpose, depending on the context. But here's a big question that comes to mind. How do you actually measure whether PSYOP is working? I mean, it's not like counting tanks destroyed.
That's the million-dollar question, and it's one that's been debated for decades. It's really tough to isolate the effects of PSYOP from all the other factors at play.
So many variables, so many moving parts.
Exactly. But, you know, our 1999 training guide does offer some clues about how they approach this challenge.
Okay, I'm curious. What does it say?
Well, first off, they emphasize that this is a long game, a marathon, not a sprint.
Right. We talked about that.
And because of that, it means constant evaluation. You've got to be gathering feedback, monitoring the situation, and adjusting your strategies as needed.
So it's not just a one and done kind of thing.
Nope. It's a very dynamic process. You're always adapting and tweaking.
Makes sense. But are they acknowledging how difficult it is to measure something as intangible as, say, public opinion?
They do. They acknowledge that it's a complex process, that you can't always predict how people will react to your messages.
And of course, that's even more true today, right?
I mean,
with social media and the internet, the information landscape is so much more complex.
Absolutely. It's like trying to measure the ripple effect of a pebble dropped in the ocean. There are so many waves and currents to account for.
Wow, that's a great analogy. And that makes it even more challenging to isolate the impact of PSYOP efforts.
It does. And that leads to another crucial point.
What's that?
Understanding how PSYOP is structured and how these principles work, it's only part of the equation.
There's more to it.
There's a whole other layer, the human element. We have to consider how people actually respond to these attempts to influence their thoughts and behaviors.
Right, the psychology of persuasion, how it plays out in the real world.
Exactly. And that's where things get even more complex and fascinating. Welcome back. Glad to have you with us. Before the break, we were talking about these four categories of PSYOP.
Right. Strategic, operational, tactical, and consolidation. It's a lot to wrap your head around.
It is, yeah. Sometimes it helps to ground these concepts with some real-world examples, you know, to see how they actually play out.
I agree. Examples always help me. Where should we start? Maybe with strategic PSYOP, since that's the big picture stuff?
Sure, yeah. Good place to start. One of the most well-known examples of that would be the Voice of America broadcasts during the Cold War.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of those. The U.S. government broadcasting news and information into the Soviet Union and other communist countries.
Exactly, trying to provide an alternative perspective to the state-controlled media.
So kind of a counter-narrative.
Yeah, exactly. Promoting democratic ideals, trying to influence global perceptions of the United States.
So it was really about shaping public opinion over time. It was a long game.
Very long game. Now, shifting gears a bit to operational PSYOP, a good example would be the leaflets dropped during the Gulf War back in 1991.
Oh, right. Those were targeted at Iraqi soldiers, right?
Yep, trying to convince them to surrender, undermine morale.
So supporting the ongoing military campaign by influencing the enemy's actions.
Exactly. Very focused on achieving specific objectives within that conflict.
Makes sense. Okay, what about tactical PSYOP? That's the one happening right on the front lines, correct?
You got it. Think of the loudspeaker teams during the Vietnam War.
Oh, wow, yeah. Broadcasting messages directly at enemy soldiers.
Sometimes even in their native language, appealing directly to them, trying to get them to lay down their arms.
I can't even imagine being in that situation in the middle of a firefight, and suddenly you hear a voice trying to convince you to switch sides.
Yeah, pretty intense. Very direct, very in the moment.
Wow. Okay, last one, consolidation PSYOP. What's a real-world example of that?
Think about the rebuilding efforts after the Iraq War in 2003. A lot of that involved trying to win over the Iraqi people, you know, promote stability.
So moving from conflict to a more peaceful transition.
Exactly. Distributing humanitarian aid, rebuilding infrastructure, things like that.
Trying to build trust.
Yeah, and to show that the U.S. presence was there to help, not to harm. So even though it takes place after the main fighting's over, it's still crucial.
Right. Got to win the peace as well as the war. Okay, so those examples give us a good sense of how PSYOP plays out in different scenarios. But let's circle back to our 1999 training document. What does it tell us about how the JPOTF actually functions, you know, on a practical level?
Yeah, good point. It really emphasizes planning and preparation. It's not just about, you know, coming up with some catchy slogans and broadcasting them.
So there's a real methodology to it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It stresses the importance of understanding your target audience, like really understanding them, their culture, their values, their beliefs.
So a lot of research and intel gathering.
Tons of it. And then crafting messages that will resonate with that specific group.
Makes sense. You wouldn't use the same approach for, say, a group of rural farmers as you would for urban intellectuals.
Exactly. One size definitely does not fit all in PSYOP. It's kind of like an academic exercise, you know, in some ways.
Really? How so?
Well, there's a lot of analysis, critical thinking. They're trying to understand human psychology, you know, and how to use that to craft effective messages.
That's interesting. It challenges that stereotype of psychological warfare being all about smoke and mirrors, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a much more nuanced and complex process than people realize. Another key element, though, is the coordination.
Coordination?
Between the JPOTF and other military units. PSYOP doesn't happen in isolation. It's got to be integrated with everything else that's going on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they need to be working closely with intelligence teams, military commanders, you know, making sure everyone's on the same page.
Because things could go wrong pretty quickly if everyone's not communicating.
Absolutely. And the document goes into a lot of detail about the different roles within the JPOTF. You know, the analysts, the writers, the production teams. It's a whole coordinated effort.
So it's not just a bunch of guys sitting around brainstorming propaganda. There's a real structure to it.
It's a whole system, yeah. Now, you know, we've talked about the types of PSYOP, the historical examples, the structure of the JPOTF. But there's a big elephant in the room we haven't addressed yet.
I think I know what you're talking about. How do you measure whether it's actually working?
Bingo. How do you know if you're actually changing minds?
Especially when there are so many other factors at play, like you said.
Exactly. And it's a question that's been debated by PSYOP practitioners for decades. I mean, it's really tough to isolate the impact.
Yeah. I get that. So what insights does the document offer?
Well, they really emphasize ongoing evaluation, constantly monitoring, gathering feedback, adjusting as needed. They even use the term battle damage assessment.
Battle damage assessment. But we're not talking about physical damage, right?
Right. It's more about assessing the impact on the target audience, you know, even if it's hard to measure.
So they're trying to figure out if those messages are actually having the desired effect.
Exactly. Are enemy soldiers surrendering? Is public opinion shifting? Are people cooperating? Things like that.
Sounds like they're using a mix of quantitative and qualitative data to try to get a handle on it.
Right. But the document acknowledges how tricky this all is. You can't always predict how people will react, especially in today's world.
Right. With social media and the 24/7 news cycle, things are so much more fluid and unpredictable.
Exactly. It's almost like, well, it's like trying to nail Jell-O to a wall.
That's a perfect analogy. It really is a constantly moving target.
It is, which makes this whole thing even more complex and challenging.
This is already giving me so much to think about. And speaking of things to think about, I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on the ethical implications of PSYOP. I mean, we're talking about influencing people's minds here. That raises some big questions, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Huge ethical considerations. We could spend a whole other episode talking about that.
Maybe we should.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, let's delve into that a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you draw the line between persuasion and manipulation?
Yeah.
Between informing and deceiving?
Right. It's a slippery slope for sure.
Welcome back. We've been on quite a journey exploring PSYOP, its history, its principles, how it's all structured.
Yeah. It's a fascinating world, isn't it? Full of intrigue and, well, a bit unsettling too when you really think about it.
It is. It is. And that brings us to something we've been dancing around this whole time. The ethical implications of all this.
Right, because we are talking about influencing people's thoughts and actions here. Can't shy away from the ethical dilemmas that come with that.
Exactly. Where do you draw the line between, say, persuasion and manipulation?
Yeah, or between informing and deceiving. It gets murky fast.
It does. Even something that seems harmless, like a public service announcement, you could argue that's a form of PSYOP, right?
You could. It highlights how these techniques are all around us, not just in the military.
Right. It's not just about leaflets and loudspeakers anymore.
Nope. It's much more subtle, more pervasive.
So we need to be having these conversations about ethics, not just within the military, but in society as a whole.
I agree, 100%. I mean, think about it. We're bombarded with information constantly, so much of it designed to influence us, whether we realize it or not.
That's true. Advertising, political campaigns, even those social media algorithms, they're all playing with our minds in a way.
They are. And they're all drawing on those same principles of psychology and persuasion that we've been talking about.
So in a way, we're all targets of PSYOP in our daily lives, even if it's not coming directly from the military.
That's a great point. We're all swimming in this sea of influence.
We are. So what can we do about it? How do we protect ourselves from being manipulated?
Well, I think the first step is awareness. Just realizing that we are being targeted, that not everything we see and hear is objective truth.
Right. Question everything.
Exactly. Ask yourself, who's behind this message? What's their agenda? Why are they trying to persuade me?
And be honest with ourselves about our own biases. We all have them, and they can make us more vulnerable to certain types of persuasion.
Absolutely. It's about developing that healthy skepticism, that critical thinking, to be more discerning about the information we consume.
And that's something we need to be teaching our kids too, right?
Oh, for sure. Arming them with those critical thinking skills is more important than ever.
So they can make up their own minds, make informed decisions, not be swayed by every message that comes their way.
Exactly. We need a generation of media savvy, critically thinking citizens.
Now that's a worthy goal.
Yeah.
And it brings us full circle to those ethical considerations. We have to use these powerful techniques responsibly.
Absolutely, with respect for people's autonomy and their right to choose.
It's a tall order, but one we can't ignore.
Definitely not. It's an ongoing conversation, an ongoing challenge.
Well, we've certainly covered a lot of ground today. PSYOP, it's a deep rabbit hole.
It is. And it's one that affects us all, whether we realize it or not.
So keep exploring, keep asking questions, and as always, think critically about the information you encounter.
That's the best defense we have.
Couldn't agree more. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into PSYOP. It's been a fascinating and slightly unnerving journey.
It has. Thanks for having me.